Blog Talk Radio.
They're fighting now over the health care bill. The Russian investigation is receding into the background a little bit. And the losses in the elections haven't helped the Democrats too much either. Nancy Pelosi is on the hot seat. I don't see her making it. She's getting up and patting herself on the back in a very bizarre fashion, in a way that wouldn't really surprise you, given that it's Nancy Pelosi. So let's get into a little bit of this healthcare. I got a lot of stuff for you, but let me play a little clip here. A bizarre clip on a little bit of Nancy. Let's see if I can find the right one. I've got about 20 of them. And I hope you're doing well. Today is the 23rd of June. 523-1450. And let me... Wow, there were so many clips. I really went crazy last night. Let's see if this is the right one. Here is... I think this is it. Check this out. You want me to sing my praises? No, Nancy, nobody's asking for that, but check it out.
The enthusiasm in my caucus, I always listen to my members. I respect the ambition that exists in any caucus. It's a part of our life. But I am proud of the unity that we have had and, frankly, my leadership in terms of keeping everybody together on fighting the health care bill in the House of Representatives. Very proud of our success in defeating it the first time, moving them to the right, to a place that I think is unsustainable, but defines who they are very clearly. I'm very proud of our unity, which gave me leverage to succeed enormously.
Nancy Pelosi, I don't know if you ever saw the old show In Living Color. She reminds me a little bit of Fireman Bill, this guy that is he's a fire marshal, and he always shows up. He's totally burned to a crisp, but that's kind of how she strikes me these days. She's really in a corner, and she's panicking.
And the negotiations on the omnibus bill. And when it comes to the issues, we are united in terms of our concern for America's working families. That's what unifies us. When it comes to personal ambition, having fun on TV, have your fun. I love the arena. I thrive on competition, and I welcome the discussion. But I am honored by the support. Every action has a reaction. I try to say that to them. Every attack provokes a massive reaction that is very encouraging to me, from my members, from our supporters outside and across the country. With that, I'd be pleased to take any questions. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much. As you just referenced, some of your fellow Democrats have blamed you in part for the loss in Georgia, the other losses in the special election. They say it's time for a fresh perspective. Is it time for you to step aside and allow for new leadership?
So,
78 years old, and she's fighting to stay on top of an empire that she and Obama and Harry Reid personally dismantled through one stupid mistake after another.
We always have this discussion. One is one, two is a couple, three is a few, some. But I feel very confident in the support that I have in my caucus. No, my timing is not about them. My comments is about the issues that we're here to fight, and we're fighting right now on the health care bill. The expansion of opportunity in our caucus has been great for people who want to take advantage and help us win. Maybe they don't want to play in that arena, But there is, I'm very proud of the members who do. They're going around the country listening, our 30-somethings listening to the voices of young people. And my 30th anniversary is this in June. And at my celebrations, I have always featured the young 30-somethings, 30, and they are so impressive. So we're paving a way for a new generation of leadership. And I respect the opinion that my members have, my decision about how long I stay is not.
It's up to me, is what she says, basically. My decision about how long I stay is not going to be decided by my critics. It's going to be decided by me. In other words, it's all about Nancy Pelosi, crazy Nancy Pelosi, who has done so much to damage the Democratic Party. It is really side splitting. Here's a little bit more. So you want me to sing my praises?
I always, always, always quote Martin Luther King in so many ways. But in this score, he said, the ballot, the ballot, the ballot. Legislation, legislation, legislation. Your life, your life, your life. He clobbered the states, making it unable to meet the needs of their people. Every attack provokes a massive reaction. The Trump care inflicts great suffering on veterans, on seniors, on working families, on rural communities, and on, as I said, working families. So you want me to sing my praises? Is that what you're saying? Well, I'm a master legislator. I am a strategic, politically astute leader. I am leadership is recognized by many around the country, and that is why I'm able to attract the support that I do. Wouldn't it be better if all the press were focusing on the Senate heartless, mean-spirited bill? Many times I had not really wanted to run again when they called upon me to do so. This time I did. The election of Donald Trump. And that this takes the knowledge and experience that I have, says she, immodestly.
All right, so what am I reminded of when I hear Lady McNancy? Only this.
They call him Flipper, Flipper, faster than lightning. No one you see is smarter than he. And we know Flipper lives in a world full of wonder. Lying there under the sea, under the sea, under the sea.
Her hiccups, she kind of hiccups, she kind of stutters, and she comes up with a lot of crazy stuff when she's talking. And the strangest thing, and the reason that I think she's in so much trouble, she's run her course, you know, and the reason that she's been able to stay in power for as long as she has is because of the fact that she's a fundraiser, and she's raised almost $600 million, $560 million. That's the key to her success. Now, she claims to be a master legislator, but she's really created the worst bill in history, so I don't see how she gets off on that one. But here's something that I think was upsetting to the Democrats when they heard this after the most recent losses.
Probably have some interest in what happened in Georgia this week. The fact is, we're very proud of the race that was run there. The candidate who carried the banner, John Ossoff, had a great campaign. I was interested in some of the statements of the people from Georgia saying, hey, we reduced by 20 points what the advantage had been in that district for the Republicans. This is good news for us, for our legislative races and our congressional races, and also statewide. I think our chairman, Mr. Ben Ray Lujan, deserves a great deal of credit for the work that was done in these four races. I don't have it right here, but it adds up to over 71 points, 25 points carved off of the Republican majority in Kansas. another big chunk in Montana, another big chunk in South Carolina, another big chunk in Georgia, nearly 20 points. So over 71 points. By all accounts, if you're a Republican, this is not good news to you. One, it's a Pyrrhic victory, four Pyrrhic victories, because it shows where the vulnerability is on the Republican side as we come forward. So we take pride in the candidates who ran their campaigns and the difference that they have made. These would not have been districts that would have been our priorities, just given the...
So anyway, she's saying a lot of stupid things that has really got the Democrats that she's leading, supposedly leading, upset, because it has put a lot of futility. And here is the net result of this is it has put the party into a deep state of depression. But here's, remember this, this is the master legislator.
You've heard about the controversies within the bill, the process about the bill, one of the items. But I don't know if you have heard that it is a legislation for the future, not just about health care for America, but about a healthier America, where preventive care is not something that you have to pay a deductible for or out of pocket, that prevention is about diet, not diabetes. It's going to be very, very exciting. But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it away from the fog of the controversy.
I guess the fog included actually knowing what was in the bill, which would be, I guess, a shocking expectation. I mean, she should really be in prison.
Well, I'm a master legislator. I am a strategic, politically astute leader. I am leadership is recognized by many around the country, and that is why I'm able to attract the support that I do, which is essential to our election, sad to say. I'm very pleased at the cooperation that we're doing, working with all the social media and small donor community to change how we communicate, but also how we attract resources, intellectual and financial, to the party. I have experience in winning the Congress.
Nancy Pelosi represents a party that is reminiscent of a morgue, old, falling apart, dying, losing her thread. It's amazing how often she has just completely lost the topic that she's speaking about. In a recent interview, she kept calling Trump George Bush for some reason. So here's Larry Sabato on the implications of the Ossoff defeat, in which Nancy said was a great victory for the Democrats.
The Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. Larry, welcome to the program. The bigger picture in Georgia, what is the bigger picture in this race? What can you tell us about what the voters were looking for here?
Well, the bigger picture to me is that the 2018 congressional elections are a year and a half away, and a million things could happen that could change the picture. But for Democrats, obviously, it's pretty depressing. That's the word I've seen on Twitter more than any other from Democrats about the result. I think if Democrats learn a lesson from this election, it's that the euphoria that they felt for the last several months as Donald Trump has fallen in the polls, and they began to believe that this would be not easy, but doable to take over the House of Representatives and eventually replace Donald Trump. That euphoria is gone, and it's replaced with reality. And the reality is it's going to be a long twilight struggle, day in and day out, if they're going to be able to retake the House and eventually defeat Donald Trump. It won't be easy. It may not be possible, but it certainly won't be easy.
I want to ask you this because you...
Well, and let's face it, I mean, at some level, the Democratic Party is shattered by the impression that has been picked up by a lot of the people who are either supporting Trump or who are no longer fans of the Democratic Party as it now stands. The impression is out there that the Democratic Party, in terms of making policy, is absolutely bankrupt, and it's become about identity politics and nobody's allowed to disagree. It's not a big tent undertaking, although there's a lot of strange characters in the party. But the premise, the thesis, whatever you want to call it, the theory, the philosophy that lies behind the Democratic Party has been driven up on the shore into the rocks. It has been driven off a cliff, and people have come, I believe, to a wide appreciation and acceptance that the Democratic Party doesn't have anything to offer people. And this is important because people buy into movements. You can be persuaded by somebody like Obama to jump on the train in the direction that he's heading, but to stay in the party long term, you need a reason. If the party is not offering something substantive, something good, something meaningful, a way forward, a way to protect families, a way to grow the economy, a way to protect the country, it's out there now that the Democratic Party doesn't really stand for anything other than this list of things that you have to agree to or you're treated like some sort of a monster. And it's kind of amazing to me that the ripples from this is coming out. That's my analysis, and I don't know who else out there who I haven't necessarily heard this in too many places. I think that Rush Limbaugh had said something like this a few days ago, but it's obvious the things that the Democratic Party offers are simply unacceptable now to a lot of people. And it's the same people that are writing off the newspapers who look at the Washington Post as pure propaganda, who look at the New York Times as a failed undertaking, who see MSNBC and CNN as catastrophes in terms of journalism, and Camille Paglia, who's a professor and a far lefty. Well, I don't know how far left she is, but she's certainly a Democrat. She's a lesbian. She's got up and said that this generation of liberal journalists has absolutely destroyed the whole idea of journalism, and it's going to take decades to rebuild it. So that's what we're watching, and it's astounding, really, to see it. And the person standing at the top of everything is still Trump. 624 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll be right back. And I do have the text machine 805-6180 to get your comments in here, and got some healthcare stuff coming up. Dedicated to the Democrats.
I love you. You know that. Black night is falling. Well, you know I hate to be alone.
Hey, I will get to the healthcare stuff, but I've found a couple of things here I think you would find interesting. Front page Washington Post, Obama's secret struggle to punish Russia for Putin's election assault. Now, I'm just going to replay this for you. You've heard this before, but it's been a while. It's been 5 years. Video, Obama caught telling Russian leader to wait until after election.
Good morning.
The major irritant between the U.S. and Russia is NATO's intent to install a missile defense system in Eastern Europe, which it says is aimed only at detecting missiles fired from Iran. The Russians continue to object, saying that they fear it could be used against them. Vladimir Putin made it a big issue in his campaign to be reelected president.
Pick that point up there, that Russia was afraid that missile defense system would be used against them. In other words, against their missiles.
To Russia. Today, at the end of a meeting with Russia's outgoing president, Dmitry Medvedev, President Obama was overheard giving Medvedev a very candid political assessment of his ability to deal with missile defense and other issues.
Or was it missile defense? I mean, this guy doesn't know what they were talking about off the camera, or what they thought was going to be off the camera.
Issues, saying that it was important for the incoming president, Putin, to give him some space.
This is my last election. After my election, I have more flexibility. And the guy, the president, Medvedev, I understand. I will transmit this information to Vladimir, and I stand with you. Now, CBS tries to say it's just about missile defense. That may be. Don't forget, one of the first acts by Obama when he was in office that nobody could understand at the time was to cancel the missile system. I believe it was for Poland. Nobody could figure it out. Poland had been waiting for this thing for years. The first thing that Obama does is he comes in and he cancels this. Obviously, Obama was in touch with the Russians, right? I mean, if this is an ongoing interest of the Russians to cut down on missile defense, so missile defense can't be used against them. All right, now let's update this a little bit. Washington Post, Obama's secret struggle to punish Russia for Putin election. In political terms, Russia's interference was the crime of the century. It was a case that took almost no time to solve and was traced to Russian President Vladimir Putin. But because of the ways President Barack Obama and President Trump handled it, the Kremlin has yet to face severe consequences. Through interviews with more than three dozen current and former U.S. officials, the Post tells the inside story of how the Obama administration handled the Kremlin's meddling in the 2016 election. All right, that's one statement. Now, here's another statement that's part of the story. Stunning intelligence. U.S. intelligence agencies had sourcing deep inside the Russian government, capturing Vladimir Putin's direct instructions to damage Hillary Clinton's chance of winning and help elect Donald Trump. All right. Whether that's true or not, simply the fact that the Washington Post has put this out as a story makes me skeptical, because I think the Washington Post is full of liars. But be that as it may, check out, well, let's go to some local news first, and then I've got a clip that's pretty interesting from Limbaugh on this topic, which is kind of fascinating. 632 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180. Right now. All right, here is the explanation for what the Washington Times is saying, this inexplicable refusal to react to this election tampering by Obama and Trump. Check this out.
Look at the historical events this way. Donald Trump, remember, he would not pledge to accept the election result in the last debate between himself and Hillary. He would not accept, he would not pledge to accept the election results because he couldn't rule out the election might be rigged. We had already learned that the Democrat primaries were rigged in the sense that the Democrat primaries were nothing more than a show. It was guaranteed Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee. The primaries, this is why crazy Bernie Sanders supporters are so livid to this day. They know the drill. But the irony here is great. Trump would not pledge to accept election results, and and Hillary and the media just jumped all over him. You remember the drive-bys. We're talking about this is the greatest threat to our precious democracy that could have ever happened. One of the candidates for president is openly saying 3 weeks out that he might not accept the results of the election. He might contest. They wanted Trump to admit that night that he would accept the results. Because what they wanted him to do was concede defeat 3 weeks out. Remember, 3 weeks out, this is very, very important. Everybody, this is really crucially important to understand everything that's happened. In everything, never forget, the Democrats all thought they were winning in a landslide. Obama fought it. Hillary fought it. Now, in the aftermath, there have been some Democrats who have spoken up and said that they didn't, that they saw troubles. They saw warning signs. They were upset. There were some are telling us after the fact, yeah, we had some doubts. Okay, fine and dandy. But at the time, and with media narratives included, Hillary was going to win in a landslide. The reason why there was no talk of Russia and tampering and collusion was because they didn't want to taint Hillary's victory. Obama wanted to downplay any notion of Russian hackery or Russian involvement or Russia tampering or any collusion because they were going to win. And they didn't want to taint Hillary's win like they've tried to taint Trump's. And so they downplayed all this Russia stuff. And they downplayed all of the Hillary stuff with her email server. What has been the media narrative since the election? The election was rigged. Trump was right. Trump was right not to pledge to accept the results because he couldn't rule out the election might be rigged. The media narrative since the election that they've been desperately trying to prove and will not be able to is that the election was rigged by Russia. So Trump is right. He instinctively knew not to concede before the facts were in. He also knew that they were essentially asking him to concede the election that night. What they wanted to do, what they hoped happened, it was Chris Wallace that asked the question. And the Democrats were hoping that Trump would do what any candidate, Romney, certainly, of course I will accept the results of the election. That's what any normal Beltway establishment type would say. You know, any Harvard-educated member of good standing, of course, as an American, a patriotic American, of course I will accept the results of our election. They wanted Trump to say that because the headlines the next day would be Trump concedes defeat. Trump admitted in debate last night he expects to lose. That's what they wanted to write. And Trump denied them that. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Obama knew about Russian election cyber mischief, because everybody knew about it. The way this story has been presented is that Russia has been a country and the Soviet Union has been a union and they've been out there. But for the first time ever, the Russians tried to hack an American election. For the first time, the Russians attempted to collude. For the first time, the Russians tried to involve and cheat. For the first time. And of course, it isn't the first time, it's not the last time. It's something that happens constantly and frequently. So much so that Obama knew about Russian election cyber mischief. He had commented on it, and he had even said it was not possible. But Obama stayed quiet because he knew Hillary was going to win, and win big.
What do you think of that? Now, what do you think of this extending himself? This is something that we've seen time and time again. Obama finds somebody who he found, who he thought he was in ideological alignment with, whether it be Russia, will help you. I can't do it now. I have to get reelected. Then I can do what for you, what you want. He goes to Iran. He gives the Iranians what they want, which is a total disaster. Flies hundreds of millions of dollars of cash into their country. He goes to the Middle East and gives the Muslim radicals what they want, et cetera, et cetera. He goes to the immigration activists the Democratic Party, gives them what they want, completely open borders. I mean, the guy's just, you know, he's like the most popular girl at school, right? Everybody can get what they want from her. But Obama was a terrible leader, and he mishandled this, whatever the Russian thing was at the end of his time, just like he mishandled everything else. You remember when there was the hemorrhaging in the Gulf of the oil, and Obama was so bothered and he didn't have an answer, and finally Bill Clinton said, we'll put a nuclear weapon down there and blow it up, and we'll seal it off. And Obama was going off on these golf trips. To be put on the spot to actually lead seemed to be the most painful thing he could imagine. Well, we've got some weather here. 6:43, we'll be right back. 523-1450 and 805-6180-2 text.
Nobody cares about me.
Dedicated to the Dems.
And I ain't even got a friend.
You don't have any friends, you dummies.
My baby's gone away. Black night just keeps on a falling, keeps on a falling. Well, you know I hate to be alone.
All right, here is from ABC News a description of the health care plan.
Senate Republicans with their plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. Tens of thousands of Americans have poured into town halls worried about their coverage. Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell delivering the plan with major cuts to Medicaid. And what about the bill when it comes to covering pre-existing conditions? We have it all tonight. And outside McConnell's office, more than 40 arrests today, protesters angry with the proposal. ABC's Mary Bruce tonight on who benefits most and who doesn't under the plan.
The Senate Republican health care bill, crafted in secrecy, finally arrived on Capitol Hill today, and it was met with fury.
The government wants to kill me.
Angry protesters, many in wheelchairs, staking out Republican leader Mitch McConnell's office. Refusing to leave, they were dragged out, 43 people arrested. For weeks, the bill has been kept under lock and key, negotiated behind closed doors. And tonight, few Republican senators are racing to defend it.
Obviously, it's a process where it deserves consideration and debate and not knee-jerk reactions.
This is not the best possible bill. It's the best bill possible under very difficult circumstances.
Across the country, Americans have flooded town halls, concerned they could lose their coverage if and when Obamacare is repealed and replaced.
Wow, what kind of insurance do you have?
Tonight, under the Senate bill, Americans will no longer be required to have health insurance. They could buy coverage with tax credits determined by their age and income, and some could end up paying more, a lot more, for less. For instance, if you're a single person making $42,000 a year, you would not qualify for any tax credits to help purchase coverage. The Senate bill also proposes major cuts to Medicaid, rolling back Obamacare's expansion. Right now, the program covers one out of five Americans.
It puts Medicaid on a more sustainable path.
Critics say hardest hit low-income families and seniors. On the other hand, wealthier Americans win big. Many get sizable tax cuts.
Yet again, a tax bill disguised as a health care bill.
The two other major questions tonight involve essential services and pre-existing conditions. First, the Senate bill would give states the ability to drop the requirement that insurers cover essential services like maternity care, drug and mental health treatment, even amid this opioid crisis in the U.S., and emergency room visits. And when it comes to the fight over covering people with pre-existing conditions, the Senate bill would not change the rules already set by Obamacare. But this will likely be a major sticking point with House Republicans. Their bill allows states to opt out of requiring insurance companies to cover those pre-existing conditions. Last month, the president celebrated that bill, but then privately called it mean. Today, when asked if the Senate version is kinder,
have enough heart with
this? Little negotiation, but it's going to be very cool.
Mary Bruce with us live on the Hill tonight. And Mary, the Senate Majority Leader wants a vote on this next week. But I know some Republican senators aren't on board tonight. Moderates who say too many cuts, some conservatives who say too little being cut.
David, tonight, this current bill isn't going anywhere. Republicans can only afford to lose two votes, and right now, four Republicans say they aren't on board. Senator Rand Paul is leading a group of conservatives who say the bill doesn't do enough to repeal Obamacare. But moderates have concerns, too. Senator Susan Collins objects to a provision that would defund Planned Parenthood money used to protect women's health, not directly fund abortions. David, there is a lot of negotiating left to do up here on Capitol Hill as they hope to get this done next week.
Mary Bruce leading us off tonight. Mary, thank you.
All right, so we'll take our last break here and come back. We got some stuff on the Oregon Mountain for you next hour. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Did you notice Frankie never called back like he said he would? Uh-huh. All right, so there's been a lot of hand-wringing, et cetera, over the bill, the proposed bill, and here's a little bit of Bernie Sanders.
This the most harmful piece of legislation you have seen in your lifetime. That's an extraordinary statement. What makes it rise to that level?
Well, Anderson, you're right. It is an extraordinary statement because this is an extraordinary piece of legislation. If you throw 23 million people off of health insurance, if you cut Medicaid by over $800 billion, there is no question but that thousands of Americans will die. If you are sick, if you have a chronic illness and you can't get the kind of care you need, you die. Or maybe you will just suffer year after year after year. And the purpose of this whole legislation of raising premiums for older workers, of defunding Planned Parenthood, denying 2.5 million women the choice of doctors. You know what the whole purpose is? It's to provide $500 billion in tax breaks for the top 2%, for the insurance companies, for the drug companies, and other major corporations. This is barbaric. Frankly, this is what oligarchy is all about. It's the wealthy and powerful saying, we need even more tax breaks, despite the fact they're doing phenomenally well. And if it means people in America dying, if it means throwing 23 million people off of health insurance, if it means telling a 63-year-old worker that his premiums are going to soar, hey, that's not our problem. The only thing we have to worry about is getting even richer. We're just billionaires now. We need even more tax breaks. This is barbaric.
The Republicans
the worst piece of legislation.
All right, so you're probably thinking that a guy that talks like that has got to be worth $0 and 0 cents, right? Actually, Bernie Sanders is a millionaire, according to Time.com. And he's got a number of houses. And in 2014, he and his wife made $200,000. So anyway, I want to see a picture of him giving his millions away to prove his sincerity. In the meantime, Jim Gaffigan, vitamins.
Probably the healthiest thing I do is I take vitamins and I put them in a drawer. Eventually, I do take them and throw them out. Yeah. When I was a kid, I took Flintstones vitamins because I watched the TV show The Flintstones. I'd probably take vitamins now if they had, I don't know, Law and Order vitamins. Oh, I got one of those hot assistant TAs. Here's a Sam Waterston. It's always bitter, but filled with righteous indignation. Dun, dun. I think it's strange that there are stores that just sell vitamins, you know, like GNC and Vitamin Shoppe. You know what I mean? What is with the old English spelling? Is this where Robin Hood got at his ginkgo? Worst British accent. Vitamins, you know, they may be expensive, but at least there's no proof they work. There's vitamins, and then there's herbal supplements, which are not FDA approved. And to put that in perspective, the Twinkie is. I don't even know who herbal supplements are for. You know, saying, hey, if you're not wasting enough money on vitamins that don't work, you should check out this stuff that's kind of the horoscope of vitamins.
All right. So talking the first hour about Nancy Pelosi and her fall like Icarus from the sky. She went too high. Her wings caught on fire. Either that or she broke a wing at her age. She fell down and broke a wing. But she's going to be toast. She is toast. She's going to be gone here pretty soon. And then the health care. We'll come back, talk about a little bit about health care, but also the Oregon Mountains. I got a nice call from somebody last night who was filling me in on some of the stuff. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, 805 6180 to text. We'll take you out with a dedication to the Democratic Party, Black Knight. Well, good morning. Thanks for tuning in. And we've got some headlines here for you on KOBE. Johnny Depp jokes about Trump assassination. Now, Johnny Depp is a very weird guy. I don't know what his mental health is, but I do know that he spends an incredible amount of money every month, something like $1 million. And it sounds like when you listen to the stuff that he buys, that it's wasted. Now, he's, according to some reports, worth $300 or $400 million. But that explains why he has to keep working. And it just seems like he's off just to listen to the guy talk. He went from being kind of an avant-garde actor to just kind of a weirdo. He is the 11th Hollywood star to publicly speak about physically attacking the president. And 30 Republican congressmen have been attacked or threatened. More leaks from Trump's inner circle. And speaking of opioid addictions, an elderly doctor is accused of writing prescriptions for 4 million opioids. If you can believe that. Some guy visited Disneyland 2,000 days in a row. I wonder if that man is Michael Jackson. Junior Sanders, is getting ready for a probe with his wife. They've hired an attorney. Let's see what the probe is about. I can't remember. And things are getting worse in Venezuela. Shortages, including shortages of food and the most basic necessities, including medicine, is causing Venezuelans to hit the ocean in a perilous journey to relocate to other countries. Amazon is going to have drone beehives in every city to make deliveries. Obama returning to campaign trail. Nostalgia for ex-president is a booming industry. Who would be nostalgic for Obama? I guess Frankie would be. Young people no longer getting jobs during the summer. What are they doing? California banning travel to 3 or 4 different different states that are supposedly insensitive to gays. Wow. Fox News is back in number one MSNBC slides as the Russian investigation loses strength. President stating Comey-Mueller friendship is bothersome. And, all right, so that's some of your headlines. Sanders is getting a probe for his involvement in Burlington College. I'll have to give you a report on that later, maybe next week. And let's see what else we have here. Well, let's get to some of these comments on the replacement of Obamacare. Yeah, we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Marty.
Hey, Marty, how's it going?
Pretty good. Listen, I know you take breaks on the hour, but
yeah.
CBS News just spent their first 60 seconds a minute, and that's an eternity in the news cycle business in terms of radio, trashing Donald Trump. And
I can barely, Marty, I can barely hear you.
They were trashing Donald Trump, CBS News was,
yeah,
for an entire minute, one full minute before they even got to any other news. Despite the fact there's no evidence that he colluded with the Russians to be elected president of the United States. So my question for you, when you have three major networks, a major cable news outlet, CNN, and, you know, Fox isn't what it used to be. One, why can't we get some diversity in the news business? And then number two, why isn't the capitalistic system taking over and filling that niche for fully 45% of Americans that don't want to hear the liberal bias in the media? I'm curious of your analysis of that. Where's the capitalist market in the news business?
Yeah, the capitalist market in the news business was exploited by Fox News. And then there was a coup against Fox News to remove several of the hosts. And you have an internal coup in the family of the owner, Murdoch, because the children, as always happens, the children of a wealthy, successful man are invariably more liberal. And because liberalism presents itself, despite its failures, its intellectual bankruptcy, it presents itself as in a universal answer for all problems. It presents itself as a religion. So these Murdoch children are going after their religion. They don't care about money because they're all billionaires. So it is my impression that they're going to try to take it down from within. And as to intellectual diversity, in an even playing field, liberalism can never win because it's transparently false. So therefore, you have to stack the deck in every way conceivable. And even then, when you do that, it still implodes. So I guess we're going to have to get our revenge on the grassroots level, which we've already done by electing Trump.
And we've done it by supporting conservative news commentators, I guess you touch as Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage, for instance. But it's like, I'm not sure why we can't get a foothold other than Fox, and then, like we just discussed, Fox is going away. Why we can't get a foothold in one of the major
because,
you know,
it's not about television. It's not about capitalism. It is about the idea that the truth is so important and precious, it has to be Churchill said it, the truth is so important, it has to be protected by lies, a vanguard of lies. So the people in the left, and it's become so obvious now you can't even debate it, are fighting for what they consider to be the truth, which is liberalism, socialism, which is the biggest lie in history. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen, but it's also a complete waste of resources, and many people are getting pulled, you know, off the gilded path into one disaster after another. If you follow liberalism exclusively in your life will be a disaster. Thanks, Marty.
I don't know. Okay, thank you,
yeah,
sir.
All right. Oh, that's just my opinion, but feel free to call me up and show me how wrong I am. Frank, you can call up and yell a bunch of words at me if you want that don't really add up into anything but a hill of beans. All right. 2-minute reaction to the healthcare plan. I mean, I think it is obvious, isn't it, that liberalism doesn't work, socialism doesn't work. So why do people want it? People want it, as I stated a few weeks ago, it's aspirational. That's what they aspire the world to be. Now, what's the problem with that? If your theory of life is based on how things should be, there's a couple of problems. Number one, could life ever be the way that you wanted it to be, no matter how much effort, time, money, and government resources and compunction by the powers that be? Can you ever change the world into the way you want it to be? A livable wage, social justice, blah, blah, blah. So here's a second issue. If the world is not that way, isn't it possible you'll create hell on earth by trying to make it that way? I mean, isn't there a reason that it's not that way? We've got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, Aaron, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, I think the problem with the whole socialism thing and communism is that it tries to impose a false narrative in that we're all equally minded and equally willing to work the same, and that we're basically all a bunch of little worker bees. But the problem is that in reality, every single person is an individual, and we're always making individual decisions that benefit us as an individual. And therefore, that's why the free market is the only way to go, because it's the truth in that it provides everybody an opportunity, not a guarantee, but an opportunity to do the most with their own lives. The other route imposes restrictions on those that want to make more of themselves and supports people at a higher level than they deserve for those who aren't willing to make more of themselves.
All right. Okay. So boil your point down, because I got to take a break.
Well, the whole point is that's why it's such a giant lie, is because when they present it, they say, oh, everybody's going to get this and everybody's going to get that. But it's not fair. It doesn't work, because in the long run, a person's not going to work twice as hard as the other guy.
It doesn't track.
Get ahead.
It doesn't track human nature. Good point. Thanks for the call. All right. So, I mean, that's it right there. If your ideas don't track human nature, then how do you expect them to be successful? Now, if you think the world is not the way it should be, that in and of itself brings up a problem, for me anyway. Why would you say that? I mean, the world is the way it is. We can make it better, can't we? Yes, we can make it better, but we can't make it better by pretending it's something that it's not. The heart, and this is what Aaron's getting at the heart of the problem here is that the socialism is basically based on an idea that greed is bad, which, you know, most people would agree greed is bad. What's the answer to greed? I mean, a lot of things that socialists call greed are not really greed. It's people trying to put something aside for their family so their kids can go to school. I was just reading an article. Even rich people can't afford school anymore for their kids. The wealthy are struggling. But what socialism does is it brings in these philosophical standards. So you say that greed is bad. Yes, everybody agrees. And then they call something greed that isn't greed. And then they find a way to deal with it that's totally unrealistic. You want people to work for others who are not working, who could work. And you're supposed to keep your mouth shut and, you know, just toil and keep going. And then, you know, everything's going to work out. And it's so that's what's called altruism, which is an idea that is created by this crazy guy named Comte that I've mentioned a number of times. But Comte was nuts and his ideas were nuts and they don't work. So why the leftist movement is like a bunch of kids who are crying and pounding the table and rolling on the floor, wanting to know why they can't have ice cream for every meal. 719 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450, and 805 6180 is your text number. Let's get rid of socialism and make the world a better place. Let's do it, friends. We can do it. All right, so talking about all this stuff, I mean, there's nothing to me more boring than to hear about the ideas of leftism because they're so false and failed. I feel like it's my duty. I have to talk about this stuff, but it's dreary, but it's important. And, you know, feel free to any of your friends who have bought into socialism, challenge them on it. What are the great works of socialism? You know what they'll tell you? Social Security. Is that socialism? No. What are the other great works of you know, just welfare, blah, blah, blah. Having a safety net for the least fortunate in society was not invented by Karl Marx. Believe it or not, it was invented by Jews and Christians in the ancient world. But there's, you know, I mean, don't expect anybody who's a real socialist to wake up and embrace that. Now, here's 2 minutes on the GOP's health care plan from Bloomberg Politics.
Obamacare is a disaster. It's dead, totally dead. And we're putting in a plan today that's going to be negotiated.
We agreed on the need to free Americans from Obamacare's mandates. And policies contained in the discussion draft will repeal the individual mandate, so Americans are no longer forced to buy insurance they don't need or can't afford.
We're potentially voting on it in a week. No committee hearings, no amendments in committee, no debate on the floor, save for 10 measly hours.
Wait a minute. Wasn't it the Democrats that passed this disaster and there wasn't one Republican vote in the House or the Senate, and these guys are complaining they're not that involved?
On one of the most important bills we're dealing with in decades. That brings shame on this body.
The fact is that the process has not been a good process. It should go through committee.
I'm concerned it didn't move back in February. That is straight out repeal, but we didn't have the votes for that. But I would certainly vote for repeal, and I'm going to support this bill.
Trump Care inflicts great suffering on veterans, on seniors, on working families, on rural communities. It is a job killer, too.
This system is in a tailspin. We made a promise that we would repeal and replace this law. I'm very happy that the Senate has gone through the work of putting together a bill that keeps that promise. And so, yeah, I'm eager for them to pass it.
I've never seen a more radical or reckless legislative process in my time in politics.
The most important thing is that we stop the harmful bill without a heart Republican legislation. They have finally released what they call a working draft that they've worked so hard to hide all of this time.
I would love to have some Democrat support, but they're obstructionists. They'll never support. We won't get one, no matter how good it is, but we will hopefully get something done, and it'll be something with heart and very meaningful.
Here is now Rand Paul throwing a little cold water on the GOP bill.
My preference was always for a committee hearing, but absent that, I'm very concerned about the content. To my mind, the most important thing is we promised to repeal Obamacare. The current bill looks like we're keeping large parts of Obamacare. In fact, one of the architects, Jonathan Gruber, has come out and say, hooray, it looks like they're not really repealing Obamacare. And I think he's probably accurate. We're keeping the subsidies. We're boosting the subsidies for stabilization or risk pools, and I think it looks a lot like Obamacare, actually.
All right, so here is something called Why Some Republicans Are Skeptical of the New Senate Healthcare Bill. And here's the thing, though. If Obamacare is a failure, if it's I don't mean that as a pejorative description. I mean, as an actual economic description, a statement about Obamacare. If it can't work, it's got to be replaced. It's got to be replaced by some other bill, which is going to have good and bad parts, right? Like any other bill. So here's why some Republicans are resisting.
Senate Republicans finally releasing their health care bill. It's only been 7 weeks after the vote in the House. Four bad hombres, including two of the president's primary presidential opponents, already coming out against the proposal. Here's Senator Rand Paul.
The intention is not to take down the bill. The intention is to make the bill better. And I believe the leverage and the count of four people is enough that hopefully those who wrote the bill will say, we want some or all of their votes, and therefore he'll try to make the bill look more like a repeal bill and less like a reiteration of Obamacare bill.
And joining us now, Molly Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, great to have you with us. Washington Times columnist, Fox News contributor Tammy Bruce. Great to have you with us, Tammy. And it's great to have with us radio talk show host on New York's WOR, the legendary Mark Simone. Good to have you.
Oh, boy.
I had to work in a legendary somewhere tonight. Let's start, Tammy, with you. We finally have the bill, and there should be joy in the land. But instead, four hombres, bad hombres, get out there and want to take away the punch bowl.
Yeah, but they're calling it a discussion draft. Isn't that special? They're like Pajama Boy. They can't even make a commitment to the thing that they presented.
Now, who are you calling Pajama Boy? Is that Mitch McConnell?
Well, of course. It's a discussion draft. Of course it's going to look different than what they presented. But my big problem is, for all even the four that are opposed to this, Senator Paul and Ted Cruz, et cetera, they've been in there also for years. I don't see a new proposal or different consolidated ideas pouring out of their pores either. So they're all sitting around and protesting when, in fact, years have gone by. This is a primary complaint. And Mike Lee says, we haven't seen
it. Is it good enough?
It'll change. I don't think it's good enough, clearly. What they do is also they don't cut anything. They slow the growth. They slow the increase. And that's a famous trick in Washington.
Molly, your thoughts?
Well, this is an imperfect bill. It comes out of an imperfect process, and people are right to be skeptical of some of the provisions that are in there. There is a lot of stuff that conservatives can be happy with. You know, if you told them years ago that you'd be able to get rid of the individual mandate, the employer mandate, lower taxes, you know, get changes in place so that you can actually deal with the problems of Obamacare down the road, I think most conservatives would be happy to take that. At the same time, this is not a repeal bill, and Republican voters were promised that they would repeal and replace Obamacare. That's not what this does. So the hesitation is understandable. This bill also provides a fig leaf to the more moderate Republicans that are out there, too. It provides more money up front, and it slows down the changes on the Medicaid expansion. So that's something that moderates can get on board with, too. So I actually think it was a pretty smart bill as it's drafted. But as a conservative, it's certainly not what I dreamed of.
Mark, I have to believe the Republicans, crying Chuck Schumer, is right now praying that this bill keeps moving and that the Republicans don't just throw up their hands and leave the Democrats stuck with Obamacare. As the president, I think, correctly said, that bill, that law, Obamacare, is owned by the Democratic Party, and it will tear them up in the 2018 elections.
I thought it was hysterical. I'm watching Chuck Schumer speak, and he said, I just read it. It's the most cruel, thoughtless, heartless bill I've ever read. Then they explained to him it's basically Obamacare, a couple of cosmetic changes. But I blame Paul Ryan for this. I blame Mitch McConnell. They had 6-7 years to get ready for this moment, to figure out what the changes needed were, come up with their own plan, and they never did it.
All right, so that's one analysis there. You cannot disagree with that. These guys had years to put a bill together. And when they finally had the chance, they acted like they just heard about the opportunity. 7:31, we got some local news for you. And 523-1450 to call in 805-6180 at 7:31 KOBE. All right, so let's see here for you. How about a little bit more on John Ossoff's spectacular failure?
Roundtable tonight, Ginger Gibson, right next to me, political correspondent for Reuters, Ranipa, White House reporter for Bloomberg, and of course, Jennifer Rubin, our pal here, opinion writer and author of the Washington Post Right Turn blog. Okay, everybody here has a different point of view. In fact, they don't even know all your points of view, but it seems to me that there was a lot of progressive hype about a guy that wasn't running as a progressive, which is another interesting twist to this. He was running on basically, well, let's get together and be normal or something. I don't know what the hell he was selling. Wasn't selling much. So you could argue, if you're on the left, like I read some people this morning, oh, he should have been a real progressive. Or you can argue he's just not a bad candidate, not a good candidate. Or I will argue more strongly, there's a hidden Trump vote. And every time you poll, you miss it. The polls are no different now than they were right before the election. High 30s. They haven't changed. People go, oh, we got him beat. No, you don't. Your thoughts. Ginger, wide open.
All right, so John Ossoff, who decided at some point in his life that he was going to learn how to speak like Barack Obama and deliver his points. And, I mean, did the guy not have a dad? Seriously, what causes somebody to do something like that? Barack Obama had an irritating speaking style because it always sounded exactly the same and it sounded false to me. He was raised in Hawaii, he was not raised in Chicago or some other urban center, and yet he sounded to me like he spent a lot of time listening to Malcolm X. But in any event, why does this kid come along, this white, skinny, white kid, very smug, filmmaker, so he's obviously trained in acting himself. Why would he do that? I mean, to me, that's he's losing points right there off of the vote. So who knows if they could have won. All right, so we're talking about health care, and is this bill better than the one before it, the Obamacare? Yeah, maybe it is, but It is a shame. It's an absolute shame if they let this opportunity get away from them. Now, here is some Jeff Toobin. He's a lawyer and a political analyst on what the chances are, to switch gears, that Trump will be impeached. And this is from yesterday.
Every day that I drive home from this job, I have a practice. I listen. I try and figure out what's going on. And so I'll listen to the different news sources.
Right.
And I'll switch around. I'll listen to, obviously, the left. I'll try to listen to the center. And then I try and listen to Fox News as well. And I listen to all of them. And I do. I try and think,
that's,
you know,
smart. I mean,
I want to understand. I don't want to just be in my bubble. Everyone says we're in a bubble.
Right.
I don't want to be in a bubble. And yet, when it comes to Donald Trump, no one can agree. And the first question I have for you is, in your opinion, as a legal analyst and someone who really knows the law and knows the Constitution, do you think it's possible that Trump committed an impeachable offense? Do you think he is going to be impeached, or is this a guy who serves out his four-year term?
Okay, I do think he serves out his four-year term. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Did he commit an impeachable offense? I think it's possible. You know, one of the things that's different from the 70s and Watergate
and
Richard
Nixon,
is that our attention spans are so much shorter. You know, Watergate was a two-year investigation, and Trump's only been president for 150 days. I do think there's serious grounds to investigate, and particularly for obstruction of justice, for trying to shut down the FBI investigation of his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and then firing.
All right. So no chance for impeachment.
James Comey, when he didn't do that. But, you know, with a Republican Congress, I think regardless of what the result of that investigation is, I think there's almost no chance he'll be impeached.
Right. So I sometimes feel like when you said 150 days, it's unbelievable to me that we've been living in this world for only 150 days.
It
feels like it's been about 3 years now.
Absolutely.
And I keep thinking, well, there's another year and then we'll have an election. No, it's 150 days.
That's right.
It's a mind-blowing experience.
It is unbelievable. The pace of news has been like nothing I've ever seen in my whole career.
I also think, in my opinion, the highs are too high too quickly. The lows are too low too quickly, so that people almost get I mean, he was in office for several days and people were using the impeachment word. And it almost felt like people on the left sometimes are punching themselves out. Obviously, they need to investigate, but people get they lose their minds over one news cycle and then it switches to the next news cycle and they lose their minds. And you get to a point where maybe people get inured. They get dulled to the idea that there could be an impeachment.
Democrats have a real risk in that they are betting so much that there is some, you know, cataclysmic scandal coming. That if and when 2018 comes along, 2020 comes along, and there has not been a convincing proof of some serious wrongdoing, they need some argument other than, you know, Donald Trump is corrupt. They need to go to the public and say healthcare, the economy, issues that affect people in their day-to-day lives. That's an argument they need to make.
All right. So I thought that was pretty good, and we'll come back and talk about the Oregon Mountains. I could not find the clip from Steve last night, but I was able to find a couple of clips where he had stated things on the Oregons recently. 741 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180 text. All right, talking about Steve Pearce and the thing that they did, and there's a little article, Pearce pushes for reduction of Las Cruces Area Monument at Washington hearing. I can't find that, but I do have a little clip that he talks about a minute and a half, and this is from the Oregon Mountain section of his own website. So I don't know when this was put up, but check this out. This might be from that.
Well, we're trying to get to the thing that the Republicans and Democrats agree on almost unanimously in Doniana County, and that's that we ought to protect the Oregon Mountains. There shouldn't be houses running all the way up the side of the mountains and over the top. So we thought, well, let's do that. Let's put a bill in. We had it in last Congress. It did not get passed. Our chairman of the subcommittee actually said that they're going to work on it this time. What it does is just kind of preserves that area that I think everyone in New Mexico knows and loves. One of the things that we've made sure in this bill that we keep access for our sportsmen, hunting rights are going to be protected. The access is the key thing. It also allows our border officials to get in and watch for people who are illegally trafficking through there. And that's one of the problems in the Oregon pipes out in Arizona, is that Border Patrol doesn't have access to it. And so the illegal drug traffickers have it to where your average American citizen is encouraged to stay out of the Oregon pipe national monument. I think that it's the way to move forward. We're inviting our friends there in Las Cruces and Doniana County to speak up about the issue and call in to the other, especially the senators. I think that we can probably cut off the floor of the House, but always they're asking, well, what's going to happen to it in the Senate? So call our senators and encourage them to protect the Oregon Mountains.
All right, so that I think that was a clip from before, but it is pretty much sharing the idea that, you know, instead of 600,000 acres, we should have 60,000 acres to protect the heart of the Oregon Mountains. And I just looked it up on YouTube and I don't see it on there. It looks like it hasn't been posted yet. All right. So, and there's nothing on KRWG on it that I can find either. So I guess this stuff is yet to be posted. When we find it, then I'll play it for you. Any other stories that I was thinking about yesterday? Now here is kind of a crazy thing. There's a story out there, by the way, about Kaepernick, that when he was playing quarterback, that he didn't like to stay at the facility and do extra study, and that's one of the reasons that they say that he made a lot of crazy decisions on the field as he didn't know the playbook that well, and he hadn't put the time in. And so I don't think Kaepernick is going to be back in football. But all right, here is from Alex Jones, Sean Hannity throwing out there the plan to overthrow Trump, and we've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
All morning, you've been talking about how terrible the Democrats are. Outrageous loss by John Ossoff, the only loss by 10,000. But nowhere did you say any prevaricating, lousy lying about the tapes. What do you say to that?
I don't know. Maybe there's tapes. Maybe there's not.
Wait, what?
Well, how about this, Frankie? He never said there was tapes. He said, you better hope there's not tapes, as far as I know.
Oh, you're cutting that. That's slicing and dicing, just splitting hairs.
Oh, come on,
like,
Frankie.
He was trying to.
How about this?
Not that stuff.
How about he says this to Comey so that Comey thinks that he can't lie, and so Trump playing chess forces Comey to speak the truth during the hearing?
That's funny. You know, Trump are playing chess. No, Comey's the chess player. Trump is the checker player. And I'm telling you what, the great Bob Mueller is going to find collusion with his good friend Comey and all of Hillary's hires that he's doing.
Promises. You promised a total collapse last time. I mean, the stuff you're selling is nobody's buying it, Frankie.
Think so, right? You just wait. The power of liberalism, Kelly O.
Liberalism has failed. Find a new god.
Liberalism is the salvation of humanity.
Oh,
conservatism is the dodo bird.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, when you become extinct, I'll try to visit you at wherever they send extinct animals. But thanks
You're
a lot.
You're never going to see me in a museum. We'll look at you guys. You're the old dinosaurs. You got to get with the program here.
Yeah, you guys are doing well. Don't change a thing, Frankie.
No, we're going to adjust. We're going to adjust. You just watch. We're going to come roaring back. We're going to be like a great football team, you know, that's down in the hole and then comes roaring back. And you'll see. You'll see.
In like a lion, out like a mouse. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Now, I've got for you just a little clip here, just a beginning, a little taster, a little teaser here for you. This claim that it has all been an attempt to overthrow. It's a coup.
Want this leaked out. I think that this is something being done by those in the deep state to upset everything that's going on. And like you said, try to undermine the president in every breath.
You know. I've got to give credit where credit's due. The mainstream media will attack Hannity for this, but it doesn't matter. That'll just make him have more viewers and more supporters, though News Corp has been very close to firing him. I talked to witnesses a month ago when the reports came out that he was going to be fired, who talked to Hannity at Fox News, where he'd been chewed out for hours by the general counsel, and they had said, you keep doing what you're doing, you're fired. But he has so much support, and it's so obvious that Fox News is sinking after the Democrat coup there, that they have not gotten rid of him yet. But the fact is, I know from the White House that no one in media talks to President Trump more than Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity talks to President Trump two or three times a day, sometimes at length. And I'll just tell you right now, Sean Hannity is currently the main leader of the resistance against the globalist outside of Trump. And then, of course, myself. But I am more grassroots, and I'm more frontline, being demonized, being attacked. It's my job to get the intel out, to take the main attack, to draw the enemy fire, so that we understand exactly what we're dealing with. But I want to give credit where credit's due. He has the most courage of anybody in the media, and his head's on the chopping block because of it. But he's held on. And then on Tuesday night, he came out, and the Washington Post, obviously pointed this out, word for word quoted what I've said. But he wasn't plagiarizing me. Headline, Fox News, Sean Hannity is encroaching on Alex Jones territory. quoting what the Defense Department and the president is telling him. Because what I've told you is what's happening. So Hannity's not even getting this from me. He's getting this from reality. You know, we all go to the same Super Bowl game and watch the New England Patriots win last year. We weren't plagiarizing each other. We saw the same thing. So listen to me very, very carefully. The number one issue we've got to expose is the Democrat plan to overthrow Trump. He's just won four special elections. He's really above 60 in the Gallup polls. If you look at their margin of error, how they oversample Democrats, a lot of incredible things are happening right now. And they know they're dying as a party. They know globalism is dying. So they're very dangerous. They're very cornered right now. And the Washington Post is saying Sean Hannity should be fired for this because this is insane and he's making stuff up. Ladies and gentlemen, we have so much proof of the Democrats saying overthrow Trump, UCOG, kill him, kill his supporters, cancel the last election, remove the Republicans that were elected in the last 2016 election. I mean, I've got the mainstream articles here where they're pushing it in the New Yorker Magazine, Atlantic Monthly.
All right, that's the story. This is a long, long piece. That's just an introduction to think about. We'll take one last break here and come back for a little Tim Slagle on cartoons. Frankie, stick with what you're doing. All of my Democrat friends out there, I apologize. Don't change a thing. You're brilliant. It's going to work out in the future. Just don't change anything. Don't get silly and try to change your strategies or anything.
I don't know just what to do.
A little bit of Tim Slagle for you, cartoons.
So really, if you take anything home from this show, just lighten up, please. Just lighten up, man. We got to find out what's funny again. Stuff we used to be able to laugh at, we're not allowed to laugh at anymore. I don't know if you saw this. The National Association for the Blind boycotted Walt Disney because Walt Disney did a remake of Mr. Magoo. And Mr. Magoo happens to be offensive to the vision impaired. Like they're going to see it. And you know what? It's a cartoon. How seriously are we going to take cartoons? The Cartoon Network was holding back all the episodes of Speedy Gonzales. Yeah, for fear of offending the Mexican-American community. You know, Speedy Gonzales reinforces that fast Mexican stereotype. That we've teased them about for years. Isn't that what we've always said about Mexicans? You ask them to do a job, they will run, do the job, come back so quick, you won't even see them move. I think they've been there the entire time, just ignoring you. But the truth is, they're like, bee, bee, honey, bee, honey. You know, it's kind of unfair, too. They don't mind defending the French-American community. They're still airing episodes of Pepe Le Pew. Isn't Pepe Le Pew an offensive stereotype of a Frenchman? He's oversexed. Incredibly stinky.